The Adventure Jogger, a podcast about trail and ultra running. Meet fascinating runners from the front, middle, and back of the pack, sharing inspiring and funny stories about life and running. Running should be fun, and so should running podcasts. I'm your host, Ryan Pluckelman, and this is The Adventure Jogger. One of the absolute coolest things about this sport is you meet new people all the time. You'll spend some miles with them at a race, and then a friendship will form, but you're always meeting the most fascinating, interesting people. And that's one of the coolest parts about my job as host of The Adventure Jogger. Thank you to everybody who goes online to theadventurejogger.com and sends me an email saying, you need to talk to this person, or you reach out via Instagram or Facebook. I will say that if you recommend someone, I do take it very seriously, and I will reach out to that person you recommend. Not everybody gets back to me. I think some people are like, adventure jogger? I'm an ultra runner. I'm not going to be on that thing. So, by the way, if you're a runner, you may just want to check your Facebook messages, because I may have messaged you at some point. But we are going to meet a new runner today. He's from Milford, Delaware. We're going all the way to Delaware to say hello to Mike O'Rourke. Welcome to the Adventure Jogger, Mike.
Hi, great to be here.
You were recommended. I was told I absolutely have to speak to you. I did not get any choice. It's like you have to interview Mike O'Rourke. Thank you for responding to my email. I actually believe I sent the wrong email to someone, and then it accidentally got to you the long way around.
It did make it to me.
Thanks. Thanks for joining me. Let's kind of get your start. Where did you grow up, Mike?
Okay, so I'm originally from New Jersey, born and raised in East Brunswick, right in the middle of the state, right near Rutgers.
Yeah,
that's where my running career began in high school there as a cross country and a track runner.
Yeah,
and actually, I have to give full credit to my mom to starting my running career when she was. I think around the time she turned 40, she picked up a new hobby of running. I was probably 9 or 10 years old, and she started bringing me with her to all these 5Ks, local 5Ks that she was doing. And my choice was either to sit in the car and wait for her to finish or run the races. And so that's probably after a few times of sitting in the car, I decided, all right, what the hell, I'll give it a shot, and started running all the Middlesex County 5Ks with her, and then from there just transitioned right into high school cross country and off to the races, literally at that point.
So young Mike O'Rourke at 9 years old was killing the 10 and under age bracket for New Jersey 5Ks.
Oh yeah, I was racking them in. There may have only been one other kid in my age group, but I was, definitely podium finishes every weekend.
Now, was it a love thing? Did you enjoy it the first time you did it as a kid, or was it like a mom is crazy?
No, it definitely didn't start out with an instantaneous love for running. I think there was a little bit of mom is crazy in there. And actually it's kind of a funny story, because once I got to high school, the summer before ninth grade, my mom was like, all right, well, you've been running with me. What do you think about doing cross country?
Yeah.
And I had been primarily a basketball player. That was always my favorite sport. And all I could think about was what's going to get me in best shape for basketball season. And so I said, all right, cool. Yeah, I'll do cross country in the fall, because I wasn't going to play football or soccer or anything like that. So I figured, all right, we'll do cross country. And so, my mom goes through all the hoops that you got to go through, getting all these forms filled out, and had to go get a physical. And, it was a lot of legwork you got to do for it.
Yeah.
And then the morning comes for the first practice, and in the middle of August, and mom was like, all right, you got to wake up tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock. I'll drop you off at the high school on my way to work. And we get up that morning, and I was like, oh, you know what, mom? Actually, I changed my mind. I don't really want to do this. I'm just gonna, I'm gonna just stick with basketball. I'm not gonna do cross country. And I believe her direct quote might have been, "Get your ass in the car, because we're going to practice. You're going to the high school right now, and you're going to that practice." And you know what? Thank goodness she did that, because it was the most impactful decision of my high school career. And, possibly even of my life, because there's kids I met on that team and experiences I had running there that have definitely made me the person I am today. I mean, the guy who's was my best friend in the cross country team, and is my best friend to this day, was the best man at my wedding. You know, possibly never would have even met him if had I not gone to that practice. So, you know, you start looking at how that decision, you know, spiraled out to everything else in my life. And it was a huge part of my life.
Well, cross country is such an interesting sport because, yes, running is an individual thing, right? It's you against the clock, against yourself, against your mind. But with cross country, it's a team thing. So all of a sudden, absolutely, you're getting points now. And you know, it's important how you finish in the grand scheme of things. So it takes the solitary endeavor and makes it this team thing. And so I can imagine, you know, we look at the miles we spend with our running buddies now in the ultra world. I mean, when you're young, when you're in high school and you're spending all that time running, you can, I can see why people make lifelong friendships from the cross country team.
Yeah, absolutely. And that we had really a close knit group. You know, we were pretty good. I think at some point we cracked the top 20 in group 4 in New Jersey, which, you know, for people who aren't from New Jersey, I think there's probably 5,000 high schools in New Jersey. There's, yeah, you know, 10 million people. There's so many schools. So to make the top 20 was a pretty big deal for us. And we had a lot of kids that, you know, were running sub 16s in the big state meets. Ooh. And you know, I think we had like 5 out of 6 years in a row when I was there, and just after I was there, we had the county champion. So we had quite a culture there of success in the cross country program with some really fast kids.
The good thing too about cross country is you are the weirdos in the school because you're the ones who like to run, and every other sport's, yes, like, oh, we gotta run.
Yes. And also, so my high school had so many kids. We had like 750 kids in our graduating class that it almost was kind of like an early college atmosphere where it was like there were so many different groups and so many different niches that like nobody really even cared that much about like who were the weirdos or who were the jocks or, yeah, the nerds or whatever. It was just so big that you couldn't even keep track of it all, even if you wanted to.
Your coach, did you have a good coach for cross country?
Absolutely. Yeah. My coach, Mr. Murray, he was fantastic. He was kind of a rough and gruff guy that would, you know, have kind of this like mean guy exterior, but man, he wanted us to succeed so bad. And he put so much of his heart into it. Yeah, we loved that guy. We absolutely loved him.
Was there a way, cause I know it's hard when you're in high school and you've got so much going on in your life and you're, you know, discovering the joys of dating and driving a car and all that stuff. How did he keep it fun so it wasn't like a chore, and so running wasn't this thing you dreaded?
You know, I don't know that he did that or that he even had to do that. I think that we honestly kind of all just enjoyed meeting at the track every day. You know, I can remember, you know, we would take our two warm-up laps on the track and then go stretch back in the corner in the shady area. And it was just fun. You know, like nobody really forced us to be there. Nobody had to give us, you know, he didn't have to provide us with any kind of extra incentive. Yeah. It was just the camaraderie was the reward in itself. And then, you know, like I said, the fact that we were pretty good and we had kind of established a reputation of being a pretty good cross country team, we kind of wanted to uphold that. So when it came time to put in the work, I think everybody was more than willing to do so. And also happy to, you know, we would all get together and go to Olive Garden the night before big meets and, yeah, you know, get the never ending possible and just hammer down and probably put them out of business. But, you know, so those are the kind of things that just made it so much fun that there really wasn't anything else that needs to be there to get us to want to do it.
Now, were you good enough in high school? Did you run cross country in college?
So I actually had a kind of tragically injury riddled career in high school. Mm-hmm. So I started out very good as a freshman, had a lot of promise. My sophomore year wasn't that great. And then my junior and senior years both were, had great starts and were on pace for what I thought were going to be great years. And then my junior year, just before the first meet of the year, actually, I had been struggling with a pain in my left leg for a while. And I'd gone to a doctor about it. And, you know, he was like, you probably have like a deep tissue thing in there. Cause it was pretty much like right in the middle of my leg.
Yeah.
And they gave me an x-ray on my knee. Everything looked fine. They x-rayed my hip. Everything looked fine. And so they kept telling me, like, you know, just get a heating pad on it before practice and run on it. You should be okay. And of course, all I want to do is run. So I'm like, right. Yeah, absolutely. I'm running until you tell me I can't. And it finally got to a point where this pain right in the middle of my leg was getting really bad. And I can remember we used to have to jump over this fence to get to the water fountain. And I jumped back over the fence one day to get back onto the track. And I remember landing and like my leg almost like wobbled a little bit. I just had this very strange feeling to it where I was like, something's not right. So we went back to the doctor and then finally they took an x-ray of my whole leg from the hip to the knee.
Yeah.
And you didn't need an orthopedics degree to see that I had a ginormous stress fracture right across the middle of my femur.
Ooh.
Which most runners know that's not a common place to get a stress fracture.
Right.
You know, you're going to get them in your feet and, you know, sometimes in your hips and things like that. But dead center of my femur, right across the middle, halfway across the bone, black line right across the x-ray. So that was it. That was my whole junior. That was the end of my junior season right there because I needed to take 3 months off to let that heal. Luckily, I didn't need surgery. The crack was on the inside of the bone. So every step I took was kind of healing it and pushing the bone back together, as opposed to had it been on the outside, they were like, oh yeah, we would have had to have surgery in there to put a metal plate in there to basically fuse the bone back together. So that was junior year for me. And then senior year, I had a promising start, ran well in September. I remember the first week of October, we had a home meet. I ran a 17:04 and my buddy Alex that I was telling you about earlier, he and I were running 1-2 in that race. And coming around the home stretch, this was a home meet for us. So you know, I knew the course like the back of my hand. And coming around the home stretch, I was thinking to myself, like, all right, am I going to try and take Alex out today? Because I had never beaten him.
Yeah.
And I was feeling good. And I was like, this could be my moment here. But I was like, nah, you know what? I'm having a good race. I know I'm running a PR today. I got my sights on him. I'm going to get him next time.
Yeah.
And so that race, he ran a 16:58. I ran a 17:04. And I was like, dude, me and you this year, we're going 1-2 at the GMCs. Everything was lining up perfectly. And then I think it was 2 days later, maybe. I woke up in the morning and I had this really weird, funny feeling in my chest. I was taking my shower in the morning and getting ready, getting breakfast in. And I'm like, everything just felt weird. It felt like I slept wrong on my side or something like that. And I had like a muscle spasm or something like that. And then my left arm started going numb. And to be honest, I was like, am I having a heart attack?
Right.
Is this real? Is this really happening to me right now? And I told my mom, like, I was very skeptical. I didn't really know what to do. I was like, mom, something is not right. I don't know what's going on here, but something's not right. And so long story short, I wound up going to the hospital and I had a collapsed lung.
Wow. I tell you what, they say go big or go home. You went big both those times.
Yes. And that was my first of two collapsed lungs in my senior year, which eventually led to surgery on Valentine's Day of my senior year of high school. I had about 15% of my left lung surgically removed.
Wow.
So that was a disappointing ending to my high school running career, but thankfully since that surgery, and I remember at the time that, you know, I was getting all kinds of different opinions about prognosis and running and exercising and all this stuff. And it was all over the place. And I was just overwhelming to hear that many things, and some good, some bad.
Well, you're 17 years old. That's a lot to drop on a 17-year-old.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I was, like I said, I was just trying not to really think about it and just being like, all right, it's going to be fine. I'll get through this. Like, and the surgeon I had was a great surgeon. I remember he had terrible bedside manner, but he was good with a knife. So I guess that's what you're looking for in a surgeon. Right. And, you know, since then, I literally can say I've had not a single issue with my lungs or my breathing. So it all worked out in the end. It was bad timing for me. I wish I could have avoided it and had a great senior cross country season or a senior track season, but just wasn't meant to be.
Okay, so you had to step away then. It was you go off to college, your cross country's not happening. Did you just walk away from running for a while?
I did. When I went back to, so in high school, I told you I was a basketball fanatic. And then at some point in my high school career, I actually switched over to being a 3-season runner in winter track and spring track. And then when I went to college, I went to University of Maryland. And it kind of reignited my love for basketball. Mm-hmm. And that's a basketball school. Obviously, the year before I went there was when they had just won the national championship. And so lots of kids there at the gym every day playing pickup basketball. And that just became my focus and where I got my recreation therapy, I guess you could say, for a few years there. And then eventually towards the end of college and then definitely after college is when I started coming back around to running. And that's when I started to get intrigued by the idea of half marathons, marathons, you know, seeing how far and fast I could go. And that kind of opened up a whole new chapter of running for me.
So go back to that moment. You're later in your college career, you've had enough of pickup basketball and intramural basketball. This thing that you've loved since you were 9 years old. Mom's like, sit in the car or you can run with me. You make the choice. But it was taken away from you because you had two promising years that were just destroyed by your body saying, nope, this ain't happening. What were your thoughts? Were you a little timid to try it knowing that it had been taken away from you multiple times? Or were you like, I don't care what happens. I need to do this again.
Yeah, for sure. I think there probably was some PTSD in there. And that was honestly, those are two of the worst injuries I had, but not even the whole story. There were definitely other things too. So I've kind of always been injury prone and still am somewhat to this day. But thankfully I've been doing this now, like you said, since I was nine. So I've learned a thing or two along the way where I've been able to stay a little bit healthier now. But yeah, going back to it for sure, after college, it was definitely nerve wracking. And I've always kind of wanted to be a competitive runner, you know, while I'm still young. And then I was young. Now I'm relatively young, I guess. But so I really wanted to run to compete. You know, I didn't want to just get out there and have a nice stroll through the park.
Yeah.
Like those days, I'm ready for those days, you know, eventually, but not definitely not when I was 23, 24.
Right.
I wanted to get out there, you know, and smoke somebody. So it was a little, it was definitely nerve wracking. It was a little scary, but at the same time, I kind of approached it with reckless abandon. Like, well, you know, if I get hurt again, something goes wrong again, so be it, but I'm going to go down swinging if that's the case. So, I would always just go out there and probably somewhat to my own detriment. I think that I probably was, a victim of overtraining and just like trying to go a little bit too hard, like some novice runners do in the beginning.
So you do that, you start exploring the world of half marathons and marathons. When did ultras enter in for you?
So I spent a long time doing road races, road half marathons and marathons, particularly halves. Those were my favorite races, and I like to travel to do them too. So I went around to trying to kind of do like a 50 state thing. And then just a few years ago, I guess it was 2 years ago now, I had probably been dealing with some injuries too there, where I think just the pounding on the road was getting to be a little bit much for me. And I got a completely random Facebook ad for an event called the Pemberton 24.
Yeah.
And I know you just had somebody on your show a couple episodes ago that was talking about the Pemberton 24.
I love that format. I think it's so cool because it kind of is almost a backyard format in a way, but it's got a time limit to it. And there's different points and different laps. And I think it's just a really cool idea. They paid for that. They were like, we want men between this age and that age in this area. Yeah. And so that popped up for you and you're thinking, well, I've done half marathons. I've done full marathons. How hard can it be to do a 5K every hour for 24 straight hours? So you sign up for that bad boy. And what happens there?
Yeah. The Facebook algorithm definitely got me on that one.
Mark Zuckerberg knew exactly what you needed in your life.
Yeah. That evil genius. I wouldn't say I thought, oh, this will be easy. 5K every hour, no big deal. But when I started reading about it, like you said, the format where it's not just running and completing the 5Ks, it's can you compete for points? Can you finish the 5Ks fast enough to get in the top five to get additional points? And then it's like, all right, well, sure, I could go out there and run an 18-minute, 19-minute 5K and win one or two of these, but then what am I going to do after that?
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of strategy comes into play. And I just liked the idea of it. And I thought pretty much anytime I see some sort of running or race event that's new to me, it immediately piques my interest and I'm more than likely going to want to try to do it. So that's pretty much what happened here. And I went into it with like I go into most of my races, you know, dangerously undertrained and just, you know, hoping for the best and expecting the worst. But luckily for me, or, you know, somewhat luck, and also just from some, like I said, from training a little bit smarter now, I've had a good time and I've had a good year. Every year I've run Pemberton. So I came in third the first year, and then I came in second the following 2 years. So I haven't quite gotten over the hump yet to win it yet, but I will be back to try again next fall.
You know, you talk about being hopelessly undertrained, and I'm kind of in this zone right now of like, how much training is enough, right?
Yeah.
And they always say, the experts say, it's better to be undertrained going into a race than overtrained. Mm-hmm. But what does realistic fitness look like? Where's the line between doing just enough and not doing enough, like not doing enough? Like, what is that line where you can run to keep doing these things, but not run yourself into the ground? And it seems like running since nine, you've had some sort of success with that.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance. And, you know, for everybody, it's different. That's the thing. You know, if somebody could write in a book the right way to do it, they'd be a millionaire and everyone would buy that book. But there's no, you know, there's no surefire silver bullet answer for everybody. It's just trial and error.
Well, we're all an experiment of one. Yeah. It works for Mike O'Rourke is probably not going to work for Ryan Pluckerman. It's just figuring out what that line is for you.
Right. And for me, you know, I learned very quickly on that it was going to be always going to be more towards that end of like bare minimum that I can do to still get to the starting line and feel confident and be in shape to run this race, whatever the event may be. Mm-hmm. Cause I know that if I go out there and say, oh, I'm going to try and put in, you know, like, I know for sure I've never put in 100 mile a week in my whole life. I think probably the most I've ever run in a week would be, I would say maybe 55, 60 miles. And that was probably when I was training for the Boston Marathon, which, big surprise, I got hurt and I wasn't able to run it. So, you know, that's the kind of experience that I have where I realize that I just have to find other ways to get my cardio and get my fitness in. So I've actually become a pretty avid pool runner.
Yeah.
I do a lot more work in the gym now than I used to do, where I'm doing stair climber, I'm doing the bike, I'm doing a lot of lifting. The kind of things that I didn't really want to do especially when I was younger, I just wanted to go out there and run fast.
Yep.
But, you know, now I see that the difference that makes for me, and that keeps me healthier, and it keeps me in the game. So those are the kind of things that now I consider those workouts just as important, if not more so, than, you know, getting in like a, you know, a long Sunday run or a run during the middle of the week just to get some speed in.
You know, it's funny because everyone always tells us that. Every coach, every great runner is like, you got to use weights.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I see another, and I say this with absolute love, I love Sally McRae. She's one of my favorite guests of all time. Yeah. But if I see another video of her working out at the gym, dang it, Sally, I don't want to go to the gym. I just want to run. That's it. Yeah. You put a weight in front of me and I'm just like, oh, what am I supposed to do with it? Oh, yeah. You know, so it is hard. But I think it seems like your story is like so many others, where when you finally are like, oh, okay, all right. Oh, you know what? Fine. I will lift some weights if that's what I've got to do. But it seems like it's paying some dividends for you.
Yeah. That's like Wardian too, man. Every day on Facebook, I see Wardian in the gym doing these, you know, these medicine ball things and these step up things. And, you know, that guy obviously puts in his work in the gym for sure. And it's working for him too. So
can we get a Sally McRae, Michael Wardian jazzercise video?
I'm sure that would probably, that's a great idea right there. Actually, you should produce that. That would be a moneymaker. I guarantee it. The long flowing hair, man. Oh, just the long flowing hair itself.
All right. So Mike, so you do the Pemberton, you meet some ultra runners there. Is that, was that your first experience with the world of ultra running and ultra runners?
Definitely. Yeah. Meeting the race director there, Trent, he's an awesome guy. I always like talking to him and hanging out with him. A couple of other people that run there. One of the guys, Aaron Ellison, he won Pemberton the first 2 years. I talked to him a little bit and I had asked him, you know, where some of the great races he had run were and so what some of his favorite experiences were. Yeah. And he said he said Leadville, number one. He was like, Leadville was the best race that he had run, best experience he had had. So yeah, that I had known about Leadville. I had wanted to do it previously to that at some point in my life. By hearing him say that and realizing that, you know, the father time is coming for me and, you know, I'm not going to be able to run forever. I started thinking to myself, all right, I'm not going to keep putting off these runs that I want to do for later down the road while I kind of still try and chase these half marathon and marathon dreams. You know what, why not? Let me just try and do it now. So that's kind of what kickstarted it for me. And then, yeah, now I would say I'm a full fledged ultra runner. And thinking about going back to the roads is almost scarier than thinking about running 100 miles through the mountains.
What is a little slower? It's a slower pace.
Yes.
You know, it's a little more laid back, which is kind of interesting. You know, you switch from that big city half marathon or full marathon, and there are people that take it very seriously. And it's just there's the energy is a little more tense. Where the energy is tense at a start line for 100, just because there's a whole lot of people trying to wrap their mind around, you know, the fact that the clock has got 5 minutes until the gun goes off, and you're like, oh my God, I got to do a 100 miles. There's that sort of tension, but once the gun goes off, it seems to move in a little slower pace, and people kind of calm down after a while, and all of a sudden you got jokes cracking and people talking and that sort of thing. So when did you do Leadville? Was it this summer?
Yeah, it was just this summer, just this past August.
That had to have been, I mean, it's a monumental task for anybody. And I think the hardest part about Leadville is, especially, you know, you're coming from, you know, from Delaware.
Yeah.
I'm 600 feet above sea level in Tennessee. You're probably not much more than that.
You're 600 feet higher than me.
Okay, so yeah, you're sea level,
and yeah, all this. I think technically my town is considered 10 feet above sea level. But yeah, I mean we have like pretty much all of southern Delaware has kind of tidal waters like spread throughout it. So you know the Milford, you know the river in downtown Milford is tidal water. So when we have like coastal flood advisories and things like that, the water comes up and floods some of the streets in downtown Milford. And that's, you know, it's pancake flat. So I'm basically the same level as all of that.
Yeah.
So I have no altitude here. And pretty much, you know, the only elevation I get is like stepping up onto the curb to get onto the sidewalk. Other than that, there's literally no elevation from, you know, pretty much from like Dover south. So for me, in order to get any elevation in whatsoever, I had to travel at least a little bit. If I drive about an hour and 15 minutes north from my house, I can get to a park in Delaware. It's called Brandywine Creek State Park.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of elevation there, but there is some. And there's enough, apparently, because that's where I did most of my training. So, you know, there's a few hills there that have the gradient that I'm looking for to train for a tough mountain race. But, you know, they would climb about 250 to 300 feet, and then you kind of got to turn around and go back down.
Right. Yeah, it's about all you get. Now, summers in Delaware, does it get humid? I've never been there, so.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we have the water on both sides of us down here on this peninsula, so the summers are pretty much exclusively hot and humid.
Okay.
Sometimes you'll get, if you go down and run by the beaches, you can get that nice breeze coming off the shore if you hit it at the right time of day and, you know, you got the right weather conditions. But yeah, the humidity here is pretty oppressive for pretty much the whole summer. And now that we're getting into the fall, it's nice because now we get that cool air coming in, some of those Canadian air masses drifting down and you know, the humidity is a thing of the past now, thankfully.
Well, I ask that because I am a firm believer. Andy Jones Wilkins was the one who turned me onto this originally, but I'm a firm believer that you cannot substitute anything for altitude, but humidity is the poor man's altitude training.
I would agree with that. I never really thought about that, honestly, until I went through Leadville this summer. And when I got out to Colorado and, I ran once before the race when I was out there, cause I just went out like 3 or 4 days before the race, which also not a great idea, but you know, it fits the bill for me. But yeah, just running out there, you notice the altitude a little bit, at least I noticed it, not that much, but the fact that I could like take a deep breath and have like cool, clean air filling my lungs and not have, you know, feel like I'm drowning by just breathing was pretty amazing. And I really do think that, you know, despite the altitude, because I really didn't have that many problems with the altitude at all the whole time we were out there, during, before, or after the race. And I do think that, like you said, that breathing in the humidity and the humid air all summer is a good way to put it. The poor man's altitude.
Well, because your body's got to work so hard to cool itself, and when it's so humid out and your sweat doesn't evaporate to cool it, your body's just like, I don't even know what to do anymore. I can't help you. And so you expend so much energy trying to cool yourself. And I think once you get out to those cooler temperatures in Colorado, where, you know, the morning of Leadville is 20 degrees, 30 degrees, maybe. It's freezing, right? And you came from Delaware, which is probably 85 degrees with 75 to 85% humidity, feels like temperatures of 95. And so all of a sudden you're just like, your body's like, wait a minute, I don't have to spend any energy cooling myself. This is new. And so, in the middle of the day, it gets up to 85, but man, 85 with 0% humidity feels a lot different than 85 with 80% humidity.
Yeah, because you're standing in the shade and it's cold.
Yeah,
in the shade in Delaware, it doesn't make a damn difference. It's cold, it's disgusting.
Yeah, exactly. That's our little Beast Coast trick. You know, it's like, how can we go out there? I know some people get altitude tents, and I've heard that those things actually do work somewhat. The masks that you buy where you look like Bane from Batman, I've heard those don't really do anything. But that's good. Yeah, good altitude trust. So if you're a person who's like, yeah, I live out east, I can't do any big Western races because I just don't have the time to altitude train, humidity, running your long runs in the heat and humidity of the middle of the day is probably the best thing you can do to prepare yourself for that. So Leadville, you heard about this thing. I mean, it is a great race. And the beautiful thing about it is that whole town just gets excited, and all the communities you run through, it's a thing. And people are really, really into it. And it's a fun, it is so cool to see a town that has embraced a race as its identity. Like, they're not, they're very proud of the Leadville 100, and it's a part of that city's identity. And it's one of those things where even if someone locally has never run it, if you're there running it, they think it's the coolest thing ever, because that's their race. That's their big thing. So what was your experience like at Leadville? What'd you think?
I mean, exactly like you just said, it's pretty awesome to be at a race where the entire town is basically built around that race and that whole race series, you know, that they've turned it into now, where they have the mountain bike races and all the other distance races throughout the summer. You can feel it, you know, from the moment you drive into that town, you pass that, you know, Leadville 10,500 feet sign, you know, you're there and everyone's there with running in mind. Everything about that experience for me went pretty much, I would say almost as good as I could have hoped. I went into it, with long shot hopes, I guess, of running a sub 25 hour, which, you know, again, my training was, I would say, below the bare minimum. Honestly, I briefly considered deferring because they, you know, I guess with COVID regulations and everything like that, they offered deferrals this year. So I thought about it because I knew I had just barely gotten enough miles in to even be thinking about trying to run this 100. But, you know, I figured, why not? I might as well do it. Who knows what's going to happen next summer? I don't want to put it off for another year. So let's go give it a shot. It went great. I did not get sub 25, but I ran really well for about three quarters of that race. And then I wound up finishing in 26:30. So I got,
that's still pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty happy with, you know, I went back and forth cause I was a little, I would be lying if I said I wasn't a little disappointed that I wasn't able to run sub 25, but also knowing what I had done to prepare for it and having gone through that race and seeing, you know, how challenging it really is, just running 100 miles in general is, you know, just crazy to even think about.
Right.
For those of us who do it, I think we still acknowledge that it's just crazy. Just the fact that I made it through there and I got in under 30 and got that belt buckle was all I could really hope for. And I was thrilled to be able to do it.
Was that your first 100 miler?
Yeah, that was the first. So I had only ever run a 50K before that. So this was a big jump for me. I threw my name into the lottery for it this year, thinking that there was probably absolutely no way I was going to get picked because the race was canceled in 2020,
right,
due to COVID. So I thought, okay, there's probably going to be twice as many people or a whole bunch more people entering the lottery for 2021. So it's probably a long shot. But yeah, I remember I got that email in February and I was like, oh my God, I guess I'm running Leadville this year. So that's pretty cool. I better figure out how the hell I'm going to train for that.
I like the justification in the mind. You're like, they'll never pick me.
Yeah.
You know, there's me thousands of people trying to get in. There's no way I'm going to get picked. And then you're like, oh, here's the email telling me that I've not been picked. Oh shit, they did pick me.
Yeah. Yep. There it is. Time to get my ass in gear. The race itself was incredible. It was awesome. I honestly felt great through probably 60 miles, I would say, like to the point where I didn't even understand how it was physically possible that I was still feeling that good. Going up and over Hope Pass twice, mm-hmm. that part, of course, didn't feel so great. I don't know that anybody goes up over there feeling right. great, but surviving it and coming back down into Twin Lakes at around mile 60, I was like, man, I'm going to do like, this is great. This is going as well as I could possibly have hoped. And then pretty much right out of Twin Lakes, which is where I picked up my pacer, started going back up Mount Elbert at that point. And that was pretty much when I started, my body started to revolt against me and be like, well, nope, this is a bad idea. Everything you're doing is wrong. You got to stop, go find a bed and lay down. Somehow I made it through those last 40 miles, certainly a lot tougher than the first 60. But it was awesome. Like, you know, I made it, stayed on my feet and made it to the finish.
Oh, especially when you get to power line. When you're going down, oh,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, you don't even think.
That's a curse word. Don't even say power line to me, please. I don't want to hear about it. Because that was where, as my pacer put it so politely, he's like, if you need to toss your cookies, go ahead, man. Don't worry about it. You're not the first, won't be the last. And I definitely spent more than a few minutes hunched over, emptying out whatever little contents were left in my stomach on power line. So I'll forever be part of the course right there.
You left a little part of O'Rourke up there on power line.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes. Yes. I left a little bit more than footprints on the trail there. I apologize.
Yeah, you took memories, but you left a little more than just
footprints and some half-digested booze.
Well, you know, it's so weird, too, because you're right, because, you know, it's summertime. So August, you know, and then the sun goes down, and all of a sudden, you're not used to it being that cold. So you've got, you know, 8, 9 hours, 10 hours of being in really cold weather, and the coldest you've been used to up in that point up in Maryland's probably 75 degrees. And all of a sudden you're dealing with 30 degrees and no humidity. And 30 degrees with no humidity feels like 0 degrees.
Yes, yes. Luckily for me, I would rather run in 0 degrees any day over 90 degrees. So it was cold and my body certainly wasn't acclimated to it, but I wasn't definitely not going to complain about the cold. There's a lot of things I could complain about in Leadville, but I was not going to complain about the cold weather. But yeah, that day, basically, you know, I'm sure a lot of days in Colorado are like this, but you know, we went through all four seasons basically in the course of that race. Cause we had, at one point we had hail. So when I went, actually right when I came back over Hope Pass the second time, it started hailing, probably like dime size hail. Thankfully it only lasted for like 3 or 4 minutes, just enough to be like kind of cool. And I'm kind of a weather nerd too, so I was kind of loving it. But, and then it stopped thankfully, cause had it kept hailing for another 15 minutes, I probably would have been over that really fast.
Yeah.
And then it also snowed at one point when I was coming into May Queen. And then when we finally survived going up power line, a quick squall moved through and it was just like poured rain for like 5 minutes.
Wow.
So we had all the weather you could possibly have in to fit into 24 hours. We pretty much had it, short of a tornado maybe, but.
It's always that great feeling too, when you see that finish line in sight after a whole, a day's plus of slugging along, you know, going farther than you'd ever gone by 70 miles. I mean, you're like, I can do a 50K. That's the farthest run I've done up until this point. And then taking yourself 70 miles past that distance, that's just got to be a hell of a feeling.
Yes. I mean, pretty much, I would say from the time I got to May Queen, which is on the way back in, is about mile 87, I think.
It's like a half marathon back. Yeah.
Right. It's about a half marathon back, and it's on like a kind of like a windy up and down single track through the woods going around Turquoise Lake for a while. And at that point, I had pretty much thrown in the towel on running, and I was basically just power hiking at that point. I tried to, and there was a few spots in there where I found a little stretch, easy straightaway where I would kind of shuffle along. But at that point it was basically just pure survival mode. And I was like, don't lay down on the side of the trail to die. Just keep moving forward.
Right.
And you're going to get there eventually. But yeah, that was the longest half marathon of my life. That's for sure. But yeah, coming up that final three or four miles, you're kind of running uphill up those dirt roads, and finally cresting back into Leadville and onto Sixth Street. And yeah, I mean, it was incredible. And it was kind of cool in a way, because, you know, had I gotten under 25 hours, I would have been finishing in the dark, but finishing 26:30, the sun had just come up, and I mean, it was beautiful. This is my justification, by the way, for not making under 25 hours. So much better. If anyone's listening, if you're trying for 25 hours, don't even waste your time. 26:30, that's when you want to finish. Because it was just beautiful, sun coming up, and just seeing that finish line and knowing that I made it all the way on my own two feet was I would say easily the best moment I've had in my racing career for sure.
So you finished the race, you got to go to the gathering afterwards to pick up your buckle. Yeah. Which takes everyone takes a good long time to walk up to get their buckle on that. What did you, after that, what are you thinking? Like, what are you excited to do after that Leadville finish? Are you going on ultra sign up looking for something, right?
No, I was excited to go to the Outer Range Brewery and drink as many beers as I could get in my stomach. I wasn't really thinking about the next race yet, other than the fact that I was thinking, that was really awesome. I will definitely try to come back to Leadville again to get that sub 25 and take care of that unfinished business.
Well, maybe if you run more than 50 miles a week, you might get that sub 25.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to find a way. Going into Leadville, my longest week was 36 miles, which is not enough. It's just not enough, you know. And like I said, I do some pool running, so you can kind of count that towards mileage in a way, because I actually have had a lot of success with pool running. I'm an advocate for that. I think that's a great way to supplement running if you need to kind of give your legs a break from the pounding. I'm going to take everything that I learned from training this summer for that. And put it towards getting back there and doing it again. Actually this summer, next summer, 2022, I signed up for Bighorn in Wyoming.
I've heard great things about that race.
Yeah, exactly. Everything I played around on their website, and everything I read on there and everything I saw just looked awesome. And, so that's going to be, assuming I don't get it, I guess I'll probably enter the lottery for Leadville again. So if I get into Leadville, we'll see. I might not try to do both of those, but I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. But yeah, no, I definitely want to get back to Leadville. I will for sure run that race again and get back to that town, because yeah, it's like a little runner utopia out there. You know, it's just such a cool place, such a great race. There's no reason to not want to go back there.
So looking back, I mean, how old are you now, Mike?
I'm 37.
Okay, so you've got nearly nearly 30-year relationship with running. How would you describe what running is to you after 30 years of doing this? On doing this because your mom told you can either sit in the car or you can run these with me.
Yeah. I mean, it's an extremely important part of my life. It's like a huge part of my identity, honestly. Like mm-hmm. when when I'm hurt and I can't run, or if I can't at least get to the gym and get in the pool and kind of maintain somewhat of my normal routine, everything is out of whack. You know, I'm not sleeping well, I'm not eating well, I'm cranky. Probably nobody wants to be around me because I'm just like a sourpuss all the time. But yeah, so it's become as natural to me as, you know, eating and breathing and walking and doing everything else that people do in everyday life. For me, it's like, all right, well, how am I training this week? You know, it's just natural, and it's just part of who I am. And I couldn't imagine myself not being a runner and an athlete.
Do you train on a plan, or are you kind of like a by feel guy? Like, well, this week I've got these things to do, so I can probably work this stuff in.
I usually will make myself like a 2 to 3 week plan and kind of adjust it as I go. I have like a dry erase board where I'll put my next 2 weeks planned out on there. And, you know, I don't think I've ever once hit all 14 days perfectly, because just as far as I can tell, it's not possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like to plan, but not too far out. So I kind of keep everything in kind of like that short, like 2 to 3, 2 to 4 week window. And that's usually when I'll try to look for races too. Like Leadville was by far probably, maybe other than like the New York City Marathon, the races where you kind of have to put in lotteries or get in, yeah, you know, months and months in advance. Other than that, I usually am doing everything kind of like, you know, fly by night, just like, okay, I'm feeling good right now and had 2 or 3 good weeks in a row. Let me see if I can find a race to do 2 weekends from now.
That's kind of, that's nice. And I tell you what, it's so crazy nowadays that you have to get in some races. You really do have to plan 6 months in advance, and you're like, I don't even know what it's going to be like. But I love those small races that still, I'm glad not every race sells out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And those are the races, you know, other than Leadville being obviously one of the more famous races and a huge crowd. I kind of prefer those smaller ones too, where you can kind of just register for it, you know, the week of, and get on the line with 50 or 100 people and just get out in the woods and have a good time and enjoy your run.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. And I hope that we always have those races. I hope we always have those cheaper races. Yeah. I like the cheaper ones, the kind of underground ones, the ones that are kind of put on by people you can tell really just do it because they love running.
Yeah.
So good stuff, Mike.
Yeah,
this,
man.
This is a fun chat. You did have some stories.
I agree.
Boy, the person who recommended you knew what they were talking about.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. Yeah, I think he did know what he was talking about.
By the way, we were talking about, you know, those low-key races, those old-school races, those inexpensive races, the ones that usually don't sell out. Jeff and I have been talking about this one for a while, but the Savage Golf Marathon, Middle Tennessee, absolutely beautiful. If you can join us, Jeff and I are both running it this year. We're going to do a podcast. Let's just be honest. We'll do a podcast out there. Unless one of us dies, we'll bring the gear out there. It's March 19th of 2022. John Harden, who has been on the podcast before, great guy, was a male model in his earlier years in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a great race director. He took over the race for the first time this year. It was originally done by these rangers of the park. And it's a really cool, old school, low key race. Look for it on Ultra Sign Up. Let's sell this thing out this year. Let's get everybody to Middle Tennessee and have a good old time. Do a podcast together, run a race, have a couple of beers. Just go on Ultra Sign Up and look for the Savage Golf Marathon. And we'd love to see you out there. Mike, hopefully we'll cross paths somewhere in the future out in the trails.
Definitely. Yeah. I got Tennessee is still on my list of states to get to and run a race. So I will absolutely make sure that when I'm down there, I let you know. We can definitely get out on the trails and have a nice cold one afterwards.
That would be absolutely fantastic. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Adventure Jogger. Really appreciate it. Our website is theadventurejogger.com. We've got gear on there. So if you want an Adventure Jogger team, Adventure Jogger race team shirt, we have those. We have the jerseys. We have the jogger joggers, which now, since it's getting cold, if you want the most comfortable sweatpants that I could find someone to mass produce, go on adventurejogger.com. You can check out those Adventure Jogger joggers. But thanks so much for listening, everybody. Theadventurejogger.com as well. For those back episodes, you can catch up on all things Adventure Jogger.
We are 100% listener supported. You can make a monthly pledge on our Patreon page. Just search The Adventure Jogger on Patreon or go to theadventurejogger.com. Join the community on Facebook and Instagram by searching The Adventure Jogger. And subscribe to The Adventure Jogger wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss a single episode.